Psalm 127. The central psalm in the Psalms of Ascent. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows. For so he giveth his beloved sleep. Lo, children are an heritage. The important word in our text really tonight, the idea of an allocated portion. It's the word used of the children of Israel when they were given their portion in the land. It is an inheritance. It is a portion specifically given by the Lord. Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. We're thankful to God for his word this afternoon. We're thinking over these sessions about that which God has given into our hands as a deposit that we need to take care of. We thought last night about a day of review. We'll think about that repeatedly. There is a day of assessment coming. You may ask the question, it sometimes is asked, what is the subject of the review of the judgment seat of Christ? I think that is massive. I think it's all-encompassing. But what certainly will be in view is the responsibilities that God has specifically put into our hands. We know that from 1 Corinthians 4. That's exactly how Paul uses that word steward that we're referencing and thinking about, the accountability given to take responsibility for something for the master. And Paul knew, as he handled his particular stewardship, that he would answer to the Lord one day. Well, we all have different stewardships. We thought last night about the fact that they're different and they diverge, they develop, they change. One of the most remarkable and awesome privileges that anyone could face is to have children. We live in a day where the concept of children as a blessing has been lost. But Christian, we don't take our view of anything from the world. And we'd better not take a view of children from the world. They are a blessing and they are a portion of the Lord given in to the hands of not everyone, but many. Now, what I want to do this afternoon, we thought about many verses on the idea of money stewardship last night. We're only going to be in Psalm 127, then one verse in the New Testament today. Of all the issues of family life and of family oversight and management and responsibility, you know books have been written on this subject. You probably have read more than I have of this subject. My focus really, and what I want to leave you with, is something of the weight of responsibility, the accountability that is linked with this issue. And to do that, I want to think about the analogies of family raising. This is the heading for those of you taking notes. Here it is. They begin with A. These are the analogies of family raising. Because we have given before us pictures. The Psalms do this, right? They give us picture lessons about issues. And there are four, I think, picture references in Psalm 127. Analogies to help us understand what this issue of family raising is. Then we'll think about the accountability of family raising. We're going to be in Ephesians 6, verse 4. And then we'll think about the aspects of family raising. Four of them in that verse. that cover everything that's involved in raising a child and raising a family and bringing them right the way through. Now, I'll tell you this before we get any further. I'm not done with this issue yet. I have six children, and they range from 19 to 10. So I'm work in progress, okay? Maybe come back in 20 years if we're still here and tell you how it worked out. But as I said last night, I'm not preaching as an expert. You know, I'm glad that as a teacher of the Bible, and we'll think about gift, that's the subject this afternoon or this evening. We'll think about spiritual gift. I'm glad as a teacher of the Bible, you don't have to have done everything and nailed everything to be able to teach it. We're all together learning on every issue, on this issue particularly. Right, Psalms of Ascent. Let's get our bearings. The middle psalm of 15 psalms, five sets of three, each of them dealing with different issues the nation of Israel faced. These are happy things. These are the psalms. I believe they are the psalms that were sung on the three occasions that all the tribes were called to go up to Jerusalem. And what a happy thing. People on a journey together singing. That's God's people, by the way, and it always has been. God's people together on a journey singing to the Lord and with the Lord before them, right? That's Christian life. But of all the issues that are faced in these five sets of psalms, in each of these five sets of three psalms, the central psalm is that the power of God to deal with a particular issue. And you can follow all the way through. The issue in this central cluster of Psalm 126, 127, 128 is the issue of God building his people. There are many forces that would seek to smash them down. There are many forces that would seek to decimate them. By the way, those forces are alive and well in the world right now. If you hadn't noticed, they've come to the surface again in the last couple of years. But God is the builder of his people. And so Psalm 127 comes with that context. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. And the psalm deals with the issue of building the house and watching the city. No doubt it's the temple and Jerusalem in the background. That at the center of the nation's experience and anticipation as they're going up to Jerusalem is the fact that there's a house there and there's a city there. The center of God's dwelling place and really what matters to them. And everything in their life took character from the place that God had placed his name. You can apply that to your heart's content and be happy. Okay, those principles continue. But you will notice how immediately he then takes the issues of building and of keeping, and he links it with building a family. And he links it with the idea of a family being developed. A house built, protected, a family built and protected. And actually, of course, that was quite literally the case, that as God built his nation, how did he do it? He did it in families. He did it through children. He did it through the parental oversight of children before the Lord. Right, here we are. God's principles never change, people. And we're not the nation of Israel, and the church is different, but the same principles apply. Those that are born into a Christian home have a particular privilege under the sound of the gospel from their very earliest days. And Christians, you are called upon, and we are called upon, to take that deposit that God has given us and look out in this issue of building and protecting that is all over Psalm 127. Right, four headings, or four analogies from Psalm 127. Children or family raising in these analogies are described, first of all, as a portion. That's the language of heritage, the idea of a portion, the idea of an inheritance. Now, God's people knew all about this. Because you look up this word portion. We were doing some Bible study kind of help this morning, and look up words. You look up this word portion, you'll see this idea of the inheritance and the portion was all over the Old Testament. They knew what this meant. Because, you know, the day came that God took his people out of Egypt and took them through the wilderness, and he took them up and into the plains of Moab, and he took them over the Jordan, and then he took them into the land, and he allocated them portions. And ultimately, they settled in a land in a particular place, and they had a particular part given to them as a tribe, and they settled there in houses they didn't build to enjoy vineyards they never planted. And they would look at it all, they would say, this is the Lord's portion. In exactly the same way, when children are given into your hand, and it's not everyone that's given children, but those that are given children, remember this, they are from the Lord. Now, I state this because we live in a culture which has got very, very, very used to the idea that we control the issues of offspring and the bringing in of children. Culturally, we are obsessed with the idea that we are the cause and we are, in fact, dominant over human life. In fact, that has indeed been evidenced in our parliament just in the last couple of days. The belief on life and ending life, both at the front end and at the end of life, we somehow believe comes into our hands. Christian, we believe that God opens the womb. Let me give you some verses. Ruth 4:13, the Lord granted her conception. Job 10, verse 8, your hands fashioned and made me. Psalm 100, verse 3, he is God, it is he who has made us, and not we ourselves. Children don't come from us but the Lord, and in one sense, they don't belong to us but the Lord. They are the Lord's. And just like we thought last night about riches, wealth, that our substance is actually primarily not ours. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. And you're given some of it to steward. That's exactly the picture of family life. The nation of Israel, and we will see direct accountability in a minute in Ephesians, but I want you to get the picture of this, the picture of a portion allocated to you. Now, do you think about children like that? Christian parents, just get your head calibrated. You know, these days we decide to have children. And the thinking becomes very worldly and very much aligned with the concept of us being in control. Stand back from your culture and stand back from the mindset around you and believe this, that when children are given, they are given from the Lord. Now, that comes immediately with responsibility. That whole language is with responsibility, but it's also with great relief. Can I say this? Because did you notice the language of Psalm 127, the whole idea of building and of watching? And there's an expectation here that God's people are active. You know, it's too hot for me to get too excited in here today, so you'll be let off quite lightly. But I could get excited, encouraging God's people to get at things, because there's a whole lot of messing about goes on. And energy gets diverted into all sorts of things. But God's house and God's city, that which belongs to the Lord, and the dwelling place, all of that, the local church and so on, you get stuck into it and you give yourself to it. We'll be in that this evening. And you have to, and you're expected to, but the key point in Psalm 127 is this, that while you work and you labor and you watch, you preserve, the critical work is the Lord's. Did you notice that? The critical work is the Lord's. Now, I'm likely speaking to some people who are parents, and you're thinking, you're not doing that great a job. Maybe, verse 3, you rise up early, and you stay up late, and you eat the bread of sorrows, and you worry, and you fret, and your nerves and your anxiety are frayed massively because here's something that you're trying to do and you don't think is going very well. Can I remind you, God didn't give you anything into your hand because he thought you were absolutely perfect and you would never fail. Just to be clear. The critical work is his. Christian, the portion that you have, yes, it's yours, but it's first of all his. Those children, they're more important to him than ever they are to you. A portion from the Lord. Right, secondly, they're not only described as a portion, they're described as a project, if you don't mind me calling them that. The idea of a building project. Because the whole point is this, that you are involved in building and keeping. These are the two examples here. There's a house to be built and a city to be protected. The idea of building and protection involves effort. Here we go. Parents are going to say amen. Right, okay, raising a family is hard. It is full of effort. It's a building project that goes on and on and on. And each phase in development, from the foundations up, has different aspects to it. But you're asked to commit to it. There's clearly the idea of being tired. It's kind of implicit in all of this. Actually, the whole point of having done a good hard day's work, but then getting to your bed, and he gives his beloved sleep. You know, you put the effort in, you build, but then you rest in the Lord. See, this is how family life's being described. This is the analogy. God will build these people by a people who work. This is the case in every aspect of life, a people who work, but a people who rest in the Lord. It's a project. It's a project the Lord is doing, and you're part of it. Not only that, children are seen, thirdly, as a potential. Look at the language of verse 3, or verse 4. As sorrows in the, as arrows rather in the hand of a mighty man, so are the children of his youth. Now, I should say this. You understand this, that there's a direct Old Testament covenant issue. We mentioned it last night, that there was a reward for righteousness under the Old Covenant of Israel that meant you received both blessing in the field, that means you got extra crops. You know, the more righteous you were, the better the crops were. And you received family blessing. The more righteous you are, the more children you have. How would our culture make up for that? Hey, you know, the better you get on, the more children you have. Now that's not the case today. There is no direct link at all. Okay? If you have 100 children, it's not because you're righteous. They still come from the Lord, but there's no direct, just like riches do, they are allocated. But they are not a reward for righteousness. But would you look at that language, as arrows in the hand of a mighty man. They're arrows. Now here's another analogy. This is the idea of potential. Christian, when you're given a child, and we'll see this in the developmental aspects of Ephesians 6:4, they're arrows that need to be formed. Now, two things about arrows. They're not twigs. Some of you are completely lost. They bear the hallmarks of having been shaped. They are shaped before they're ever sent. They are arrows that need to be formed. They are shaped and then they're sent. Christian, that is your job as a parent raising children for God. Now, here's an issue. Some saints don't like this, but I'm going to preach it anyway. I preach what I believe, whether saints like it or not. There's a time comes when they leave. Now, I'm not quite there yet, but I'm getting towards it, you know. I might crumple like a pack of cards when the time comes. But you're raising them to leave you. It's possible to raise children such a way as they are never able to leave you. And that's never the intention. You have to raise them to be sent. You know, children have massive potential. You don't know where your children will go and what they'll do. The work of God that's possible is massive. Your job is to look at that potential, to shape them, and then to have them sent. They're not your possessions, they're your stewardship. And finally, children are seen as a protection. Look at the end of the verse. Happy is the man that has his quiver full of them. Again, we're countercultural here, right? Okay. When I tell people I have 6 children, most of them nearly fall over at the issue. How on earth? How does that work? Some of them, give you quite a amount of pity. You know, it's fascinating, however, the number of older people. I can tell you the number of old, this is not believers now, not Christians, who've told me that if they had their time back again, they would have had more children. You see, this is, I think, what you have in verse 5. The man has got a cover full. There comes time, you see, when you start off by protecting them, but then ultimately they become a protection for you. The idea was, you know, if you've got a squad in the family, you know, when the enemy, when you meet the enemies in the gate, you're a little bit intimidating. Like, you've got quite a force. Maybe you've got a few big strapping lads there, your sons. You've got the enemies who are against you maybe just will just quieten down a little bit and back off. You see, there's this reciprocity of you've got to work in early life to protect them, but then ultimately they protect you. By the way, that's the circle of life in terms of the way it works in the Bible. You see that with Joseph, don't you? 17 years his father looked after him. And then 17 years he looked after his father down in Egypt. The two ends of life. They are a portion from the Lord. They're a project for the Lord. They're a potential for the Lord. And they're a protection, a blessing in life. Right, Ephesians 6. And let's get more practical. That is the analogies of family life. Let's think about accountability. Ephesians 6, verse 4. Now notice, children are referenced in verse 1, children obey your parents. Verse 2, honor your father and mother. The word parents is used in verse 1. The words father and mother are used in verse 2. I say that just because I want you to know that Paul knows the word for parents. And he knows the word for father and mother. And yet, look at verse 4. You fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Right, fathers, pin your ears back for a second. The accountability of family raising. We've seen the analogies. Here's the accountability. The accountability sits with fathers. Let that settle down for a moment or two. The accountability sits with fathers. The raising of children is a father and mother together. It's a parental team in the ideal, absolutely expected, that together the complement of the mother and the father's attributes, together bringing what's required for the child. This is not about resources. It's not about the allocation of resources. There are responsibilities that fall under this activity, which clearly will be taken up by the mother. You have examples all through the Bible of it. You have a motherly care and a motherly heart, and you have a motherly nurturing that goes on. But I want you to notice that fathers are accountable. We're in this realm of stewardship in these meetings. And God holds people accountable in different spheres. You might not like what the politicians are doing in your country. You'll not answer to the Lord for what they do. They will. They are directly held accountable. You'll be held responsible for how you submit to them. And that's hard enough. And in the different realms, we'll think about the local church on Sunday evening. The elders bear a burden of accountability. Now, here's the family raising process from the very beginning right the way through. And fathers are accountable. You're over all that happens in your house. Now, that doesn't mean you do it all. Praise the Lord. You do not do it all. And please don't try and do it all. More of you in the detail is not the answer. But you're accountable for it all. Fathers have to be concerned about and set the frame for all that's done in the house. In fact, we'll get into this tomorrow when we think about elders, but the idea of ruling your own house and taking care of your house is language that's used of fathers in the Bible. And the idea being that you stand in front and over it, you have forethought for all the details of what the house requires. You provide the protective environment and the leadership environment that enables the full raising of the family. That means lots of things. One of the things it means is protecting your wife. You know what will happen? The nurturing and caring general disposition of a woman, as the children get older, will start to be challenged. You all look very innocent. You look massively innocent, but I think you know what I mean. Children will raise up and they'll start to flex their personalities and their flesh. And it'll be a case of challenging authority. And the one that will first of all get it is the mother. Right, fathers, your job is to make sure that she is respected in the home. You do that. You set that bar and you make sure it's clear. She will do a whole lot of the family raising, but you stand accountable. And home after home after home has suffered from the lack of a father. Sometimes the father being there, of course. It is a curse upon our nation, the number of homes without fathers. Direct causal relationship between breakdown all over the place societally and absent fathers. But sometimes fathers are there, but useless. Not taking accountability. Leaving it all to the mother. You're accountable in your home. Now, you're also accountable to particularly represent the Lord. You know, this is in the context, by the way, of the fifth commandment, honor thy father and mother. Which, if you study the commandments, and why wouldn't you? They are critical to understanding morality and righteousness. But number five is part of the first table of the law, which is the Godward commands, and yet there is mother and father standing there. Why? Because mothers and fathers stand in the place of God in a home. But quite specifically, the father is called to represent the father. You can go and look at the Old Testament references and the New Testament references that link God and his fatherhood. Some of you were talking about thematic studies earlier today. Go and do a thematic study of the fatherhood of God. And you read about his care and his protection and his guidance. And fathers, recognize this, that you have to stand up and take accountability in the home. Now, that's the accountability. Let's think about the aspects of family raising. And there are four of them in the text. You need to do a bit of word study here, and I'm just going to give you the titles, and then we'll unpack it a little bit. You fathers, okay? You can read that, fathers and mothers, with fathers leading and taking accountability. That's the idea. You parents, with fathers taking the accountable lead. Four areas, four aspects of family raising. There's the tempting of the children. Verse 4, don't provoke them to wrath. There's the tending of the children, that's the word bring them up, it's the word for nourishing, it's the idea of succoring, which is where we got our heading from for the meeting, the idea of tending to them. Then the training of the children, that's the word nurture, it's actually that word chastise or child training that you find in Hebrews and in different places. So the tempting of the children, the tending of the children, the training of the children, and then the teaching of the children, we could think about this idea of admonition, which is about mindset and it's about the verbal instruction of children. Okay, there's your four areas. If you can do all four of those well, you'll face the Lord one day and it'll be a happy thing. But all of those are hard. Now you'll find examples all over the Bible to bring into detail here. We are in the helicopter going over the subject and trying to land something of the weight of it on us. That's all we're doing. A portion from the Lord given to us, accountable fathers in a home, parents seeking to raise children for the Lord. It's full of heartaches and difficulties, but these four areas. Isn't it interesting that the first thing that's said is, provoke not your children to wrath. You thought that might have been at the end, but it's right up front. And it's almost as if fathers called to the front might get a little bit heavy-handed. Is that possible? Maybe. That fathers are called upon, and as they take hold of the responsibilities, the possibility of irritating their children, of disheartening their children, of raising the standards, you know, right, you suddenly take fatherhood seriously. Don't do this after the meeting, right? If you haven't been too interested, don't you get home and say, right, things are going to be different. I'm going to sort it all out. I've got all the answers. Have the desire, but maybe just do it maturely over time. The idea of I will clamp down on everything and I'll put my foot through everything. There's a need for a warmth and an encouragement in the whole area of child raising. You know, children are naturally, most of them, they're not all the same. In fact, they're massively different. But they generally have an inbuilt desire to please. They want to make you happy. Try not to crush that with your expectations and your demands. You know, it's possible. That's the idea, I think, behind this, the idea of disheartening your children. That's in Colossians chapter 3, the parallel verse. Don't discourage your children. The idea of bringing them or provoking them to wrath is nagging them or pressing them into a bad response. You know, you never say well done. That whatever's done is never good enough. You know, that would have been the culture in which this was written. If you want to read the Eastern context of fatherhood, the whole idea we're about to get onto of nurturing was a million miles away. Now, let's get on to the next three: tending, training, and teaching. Tending the children. The word means to nourish them. It's the word that's used in chapter 5 of a husband. And the whole idea of nourishing and cherishing that goes on in a marital relationship. It's linked with the idea of feeding. The idea is of bringing them to maturity. The basic idea is development. You're looking for development. You are bringing them from immaturity to maturity. You're bringing them from lack of capability to being capable. You're bringing them from weakness to strength. Okay, that's your job. Now, that involves care. In fact, the whole idea is basically involving the fact that you are tending to it like a growing plant. He says, not knowing anything about tending growing plants. But that's the idea, that you have to watch and you have to be interested. And you're interested in the next stage of development. Now, this is where fathers actually have to take a lead, because the danger of the nurturing, caring aspect of a mother is to do things for the child. Which is wonderful, because children start off doing nothing. They are only work. They can't do anything. The difficulty is knowing when to stop doing things for them and to get them moving up the capability charts. Your aim is not to just make their life a pillowed nest of feathery wonder. You're not there just to make their life easy. You're there to develop them. You're there to bring them on in maturity. You're there to make them capable, to encourage capability, to tend to them. But let me get on to training. And we're looking at this word nurture or child training. Now, here it is. This is the discipline word. You go from development to discipline. Fathers, you're accountable for the development of the children. Are they being nurtured? You're there for the disciplining of the children. Right. Now, straight away, you can't avoid the fact that disciplining involves pain. I've got three headings here. this idea of training children up, of bringing them through, of maturing them through. The idea is rearing them. And as you do that, you have to train them socially, spiritually, and sorely. There you go. There's three headings for you. There's going to be pain. If we went to Hebrews 12, we don't have time, but you'll see this word uses chastise, this child training idea. And the idea is that you're going to make them unhappy sometimes. Like, you don't go out of your way to make them unhappy, but as you develop them, you're going to. Now, the kind of words that is linked with this in Hebrews 12 is the word rebuke, which means to tell them they're wrong. That's required sometimes. There's no amens for that, but you know that's required. We live in a culture which will tell you to be very careful when to tell them they're wrong. Father, it's your job to make sure you tell them they're wrong. Not all the time, not being a place where you can never be pleased, not provoking them to wrath, but calling out clearly what's wrong. In Hebrews 12, it's linked with scourging. Now, people try, and it's amazing the exegetical backflips people do to make scourging not mean scourging. Now, that got your attention. Just go and look at it, what it means. It's going to be painful at times. Fathers, you're over that. The chastising, the scourging. Children have a will that needs to be trained. It needs to be disciplined. If you don't discipline it, if you don't train it in the Lord, the future for them is worse. That's actually one of the issues in verse 2, the whole idea of honoring your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise that it might be well with you on the earth. There's an inbuilt betterment of the child's life, of a bit of honor, of authority in the home. Training them to honor in the home is part of what will enable them to operate well in the future. It is a promise for their good in life. So you train them sorely. But I'm going to say three other things. By the way, David failed in this, it seems. Of all the things you can pick up about David, and he's wonderful in lots of ways, he doesn't seem like an awesome father. Like, read about how he approached his children and the things he didn't say to them. And how he didn't handle Absalom and Amnon and Adonijah. Right? He seems to have difficulty being a father. It's not easy. Train them spiritually. Disciplining them in what matters in life. Here we are. Some of them might not want to come in really hot meetings in a high school building in the middle of June. But it might be good for them to be there. You're disciplining their life. You're training them up. You're showing them what matters. Fathers lead with the invaluable support and work of mothers to raise the children, to train them spiritually. Now, Isaac failed in this. You get into Isaac's home. And as an old man, what a sad end, eh? As an old man, what he really wants and what he really values is what Esau does in the field with savory meat. The spiritual issues that Rebekah sees and Jacob sees are second order for Isaac. See all those problems in that home? There's a father at the head of them who doesn't have his spiritual priorities right. Discipline your children. Do it sorely, as required. Do it spiritually. But do it socially. You know, you go through the Proverbs, and you've got father speaking to sons. I always say this because people don't seem to have grasped this. Proverbs is the book for boys. Young men, get into Proverbs. Please get into Proverbs. It's written for you. It really is. The issues you're facing as a young man are dealt with in Proverbs. Study Proverbs. Young woman, study Song of Solomon. It's written specifically for the daughters of Jerusalem. It's for you. Go and study it and find help. Right? But Proverbs, a father instructing his son, and there's all manner of social issues dealt with. How to interact with the world. Wisdom and how to live in the world. You discipline a child, you train them up sorely, spiritually and socially. Now, I'm going to finish off here, but finally, you're teaching your children. And this is the idea of the final clause, the admonition of the Lord. Admonition is literally the word. Literally, the word is the setting of the mind. We talk about mindset. That's what this is. You are forming their mindset. Right, fathers, here we are. You're accountable. Let's be clear. How are the mindset of your children being formed? Question. Internet access. How's your internet access? That is forming the mind of your children. You're accountable to the Lord for it. Television programs. It's the mindset of your children being formed. Are you in control of it? Do you know what it is? You're accountable to the Lord for it. Family Bible times, where you're bringing something of the truth of God to them. This is literally the word, the idea of verbal instruction is constantly linked with this word of admonition. You set the mind through verbal instruction. Are they hearing truth from your lips? That's the call. Accountable to the Lord for the setting of the mind of the children. Now, it's all in the sphere of the Lord. You bring the Lord in all the time. Now, that's why you can't, you know, I don't know, is your bookshelf full of worldly books on parenting? How to raise children? They might have some help for you. But in these areas, all these areas, it's all in the Lord. You tend them in the Lord. You show the care of your father to them as father. You discipline them. You train them in the Lord. You discipline them not because they've gone against your rules. That's Solomon. Remember? Or Saul, rather. That's Saul with Jonathan. Makes a stupid rule about not eating. And then just punishes Jonathan for it, or wants to. Don't make silly rules, and when they cross against your silly rules, discipline them. Is that rule something in your house that's in the Lord? Is it linked with the Lord? Is it under the Lord? Or is it just you being a bit you? Discipline them in the Lord and teach them in the Lord. Now, you see, the responsibility here means that you have to know something of the Lord to be able to teach them in the Lord. All of this comes back to walking with the Lord. We thought last night about how you handle resources. How will you ever know how to spend and save and sacrifice well if you're not walking with the Lord? There is no golden answer to this. There's no simple formula. And the world might have its answers. The world might have its ways. The psychologists and psychiatrists will come up with their ideas. The safest thing for a parent to be is to walk well with the Lord. And most of our failures, most of my failures over all the years of my fatherhood, is not walking with the Lord like I ought. That flows into not training them and not teaching them and not tending them like I should and tempting them far more than I should. Right, if I've got anything of teaching right, what I meant to teach in this session was for you to feel the weight of what it means to have children under your accountability as a deposit from the Lord. It's not meant to crush you, but it's meant to make you feel it. And to make you cast upon the Lord for help. To lead the children well and to raise them well. Let's close in prayer and give thanks for the food.